Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's weekly wrap-up. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour, we will be discussing World of Professional Wrestling at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. I guess the big news this week, folks, is that there could have been an accidental reveal of the ending of what would apparently be SummerSlam's main event. And if that's the case, and I'm not 100% sure or convinced it is, this would be one of the single stupidest things to ever occur. Not even in the WWE, because the WWE really didn't have a ton to do with this, but just to occur. Start with this. Apparently, an action figure was just released of Brock Lesnar. And the action figure comes with both championship belts. Now, there are some people saying, well, that's not, doesn't mean anything. He's held belts, and they're just saying that, you know, they're accessories. That could be, but the timing is extraordinarily unusual, folks, that a Brock Lesnar figure is being released that holds both belts. If this is indeed the ending to the Roman Reigns-Brock Lesnar match, this is a colossal, colossal error on the part of the company putting it out. And it won't be the first time that action figures have actually kind of predicated what was going to happen. See, a lot of the times these companies need to know ahead of time, so-and-so's getting a makeover, so-and-so's getting their hair cut, so-and-so's going to look like this. And the idea behind it is you're not going to release it until that happens. But on occasion, some of these action figures have been released before that incident happened, and it kind of gives away what's going to happen. If that's the case with Brock Lesnar, and Brock Lesnar does indeed win the belts at SummerSlam, this is an unforgivable error. Just an unforgivable error. Now, I'm not 100% convinced, and I'll tell you why. I don't see Brock Lesnar as the champion. I really don't. I mean, there are people saying, do you honestly think Brock Lesnar's coming back to lose to Roman Reigns for the third or fourth time? Yeah, I know. That does seem unusual. That definitely seems unusual. But then let's juxtapose that with, do you honestly see Roman Reigns losing his titles before WrestleMania? When they have clearly been attempting, at least, to build up The Rock versus Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. If Brock Lesnar were to win these titles, what does The Rock versus Roman Reigns mean? Not a lot. And then who's Brock Lesnar's opponent going to be? But even if you didn't want to look that far ahead, they have, what, Clash at the Castle coming up after SummerSlam? And it's being advertised that Drew McIntyre is taking on Roman Reigns for the belt. What would that main event be if Brock Lesnar walked out of SummerSlam with the title? So I'm not 100% sure. But I will say this. It is very, very unusual timing to release a Brock Lesnar SummerSlam figure that has both of the belts. Now, they could easily say, well, we're going to release Roman Reigns, and he has both of the belts, too, and what we're basically saying is it could either one could happen. But normally, if you're going to add accessories, which obviously cost more money, you're doing it because you're trying to spur sales of that particular figure, and that particular figure, if they don't hold that belt, I don't know why you'd have that belt. It doesn't make a ton of sense. If right now, all of a sudden, they released a figure of, I don't know, Carmella with a woman's title, you would have to assume that they know something we don't know, right? Otherwise, why bother? Why bother with the extra accessories? So I can't believe this was done. I don't necessarily believe it means Brock Lesnar's winning. But, Mike, this is some very unusual timing, and if it does mean that, the WWE is going to have egg all over their face.
Yeah, they will. Now, granted, if they released a theory with both belts, then that's also telegraphing what could happen, because you know we know that theory has the money in the bank. So if they did release that, then fine, but yeah, all right.
Yeah, see, that's where the problem occurs, is because let's say they were releasing money, a series of Money in the Bank figures, and every single one came with a Money in the Bank briefcase. Okay, we get it. Those were the participants, and all of them could have potentially pulled down the Money in the Bank briefcase. So there's a reason for that accessory. You can look back on it and say these were the guys this year that was in Money in the Bank, and each one of the figures came with a Money in the Bank briefcase. But if only one did, then I think you'd probably be right to assume that that action figure company was told ahead of time who was going to win, and they marketed that for after Money in the Bank and released it before. So, Todd, very unusual, but I guess if you go to your local Target or Walmart, you might be able to cop a Brock Lesnar with both belts action figure as we speak.
When I saw that picture with Brock Lesnar, new action figure with a Universal and the WWE Championship on Facebook, on social media, I sort of laughed at it. I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah, I don't know what to think of it. I honestly don't know what to think. The WWE, for better or for worse, has done a good job with this main event, because I don't know what the hell's going on. To me, it would seem logical that Roman Reigns would hang on to those championships. You have the Clash at the Castle coming up in the UK. You have a big WrestleMania staring down the barrel of that. And you'd think you'd wait to change the titles until then. However, people are absolutely right when they say, is Brock Lesnar really okay with losing to Roman Reigns this many times in a row? I don't know. Maybe he is. Maybe if they put enough zeros behind the paycheck, yeah, I don't care. Maybe he's that type of guy. But Brock Lesnar has always impressed me as the type of guy who will take a fall, but he's not going to keep right on taking fall. He's not going to be made a jabrona. And it does strike me as odd that he would come back after losing, and then losing before that, and just take another loss. That does strike me a bit odd. Now, it is a last man standing match, so he doesn't have to be pinned or made to submit, so that certainly could factor into it. But I still say a loss is a loss, and I find it odd that Brock Lesnar would be okay with losing this many times to the same person. Brock Lesnar has a hard time fighting the same person that many times, let alone losing to them. Now, I'm sure he has a lot of respect for Roman Reigns, and he likes Roman Reigns, but man, 3-4 times in a row? Ouch. Very unusual. So we'll see. We'll see if the action figure predicts the future. If it does, the WWE is really going to have to be more careful about their marketing, and these manufacturers are going to have a very strict date in which they can release these things. And they can't jump the gun and release them ahead of time. Now, that's normally what happens. See, the action figure business, that's normally what happens. If you go to the store, you know, a month or so before the Minions movie hit the theaters, you're going to see all the Minions figures for the new movie. Because they're working up interest for the movie, and at the same time, it'll be there after the movie, so acts as an advertisement for the movie, and then after the movie, if kids want to collect them, I want to go get some, then it works both ways. But you can't do that with something like wrestling. Especially if in any way, shape, or form it tips the hand of what's to come. And especially if it's one of your top four pay-per-views. I mean, the only thing that would have been worse is if it was for WrestleMania. Because I would argue this, you know, and some people say the Royal Rumble, but I would argue SummerSlam is maybe their second biggest one. Here's something to ponder. Inside sources are saying that the very people inside the WWE hierarchy are saying they are not happy with the SummerSlam card. They think the SummerSlam card is weak. Wow. Well, here's a newsflash. You're right, it is weak. It's damn weak. And it's not necessarily weak because of the athletes you have in it. It's weak because of the storylines you built up for it. So, yeah, this is not one of your better SummerSlam. I think that goes without saying. But if the people in charge aren't happy, how is it that you want the fans to be happy? I mean, if you're literally looking at your card saying, this one's not so great, change it. You still have time. Do whatever you have to do, because you should not be promoting a product you don't believe in. And from everything I'm reading, there's many, many people in the WWE offices who do not believe this SummerSlam is a good SummerSlam. And maybe it's because they know the outcome. I mean, let's just get right down to it. If Theory does not cash in, if Roman Reigns retains his title, if none of the belts really change hands, is it that big of a deal? Is this SummerSlam that big of a deal, Mike?
No, not really. I mean, look. I mean, it's not a big deal. And look, we can say that about a lot of recent WWE pay-per-views. It's not just this year's SummerSlam that we could have said this about, right? I mean, when was the last time a WWE pay-per-view was a huge deal?
It's been a while. It's definitely been a while, no question. A lot of them seem to be, sometimes they're good matches, but they're not a big deal. You're saying, that was a good match, it didn't mean much, but it's a good match. I mean, there's a lot of good matches. I'm sure Riddle and Seth Rollins is going to be a good match. It doesn't mean anything. It's a meaningless match. So, Todd, it appears that the powers that be aren't even happy with SummerSlam this year.
I'm sure, like you said, the powers that be don't look too happy about the card and the pay-per-view itself, you know, this year. You know, it's to them, it just don't look good, or on paper.
And to the fans, it doesn't actually look all that good either. I mean, the Brock Lesnar-Roman Reigns thing has been done to death, and I don't think there's anybody who's really too invested in that. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll see. But speaking of Seth Rollins, something very interesting happened this week. Apparently, Seth Rollins was running I guess he runs like a wrestling school or a workout camp or something. I'm not sure what it was. Apparently, some people stopped in there, and he was in the middle of a workout or something, and they approached him. And I don't know what he said or what he did, but I guess in retrospect, he thought it was really probably not good. So he took to Twitter to apologize to those two fans. And basically, I'm paraphrasing, but basically he said, I was a bit aggressively upset, and I handled it very poorly. And I want to apologize to those fans. If they read this, I want to invite them to come back. come back and we'll take a picture and we'll get an autograph and we'll chat, because I was wrong. And I certainly was a little too abrupt with how I handled you. And that doesn't just go for those two fans. That goes for everybody. People are, in fact, invited to come down. If I'm in the middle of a workout or something, please respect it. But, you know, if you want to hang out, there's certainly, I love to meet my fans. I certainly have some time to chat with you or take a picture or get an autograph. I have no problem with that. And I don't want people to think that I do. Okay, well, I can praise him for that and say that's a very good thing. But let's be real. Rollins has entered the WWE. I don't think I've heard three good stories about him. I don't think I've heard three. I've heard 103 about how he blew fans off, couldn't give a damn about people trying to take pictures, wouldn't stop, yelled at people, was rude or arrogant when asked, came off badly. In fact, it became a moniker of his that he's just not someone you can approach outside the ring. So my spidey senses went off when Seth Rollins takes to Twitter to apologize to two fans to the point where he invites them back. And then I remembered the Titus O'Neil beginning to Monday Night Raw. And I said to myself, I wonder if that spot was as much for the wrestlers as it was for the fans, and that the WWE, knowing that they got some stiff competition, knowing that there's some investigations going on and they're sort of getting a black eye in the public, has really sent a message to their wrestlers, you are not to be rude or obnoxious to any fans outside the ring. You don't have to stop and sign 8,000 autographs. But you also don't have to be rude. It seems likely that that's exactly what happened, because I do not see Seth Rollins taking to Twitter on his own to suddenly feel remorseful for saying something aggressive to fans looking for his autograph when he's done this 100 times. What makes this one different than the other 99 that we know about? The only thing I can think of that makes it different is it came right after Titus O'Neil made the WWE announcement that the WWE superstars are going to go above and beyond to entertain you, not just in the ring, but outside the ring as well. And then suddenly Seth Rollins has this incident and they're afraid it's going to make the dirt sheets or social media, and someone got in Seth Rollins' ear and said, buddy, unacceptable. Unacceptable. Fix it. I'm going to go with that theory, Mike, because Seth Rollins has done this before. He's never apologized. So why all of a sudden is he recalcitrant and saying, oh, please come back and we'll take pictures and chat and I was wrong? It's completely out of character.
Right. It's completely out of character. And, you know, you would expect somebody like a Titus O'Neil to do that, or somebody like a Becky Lynch to do that, you know, because that's well within their character. Yeah, Becky Lynch is playing the arrogant, you know, heel type thing, but her character is not that. Her character is, you know, a nice person, right? Whereas there just are some wrestlers that are very prickly, very, you know, their attitude-wise. I mean, you know, you tell a story about Ted DiBiase and how he reacted to the fans who wanted a bunch of autographs and stuff, and he was with another wrestler, and the other wrestler said, I wouldn't have done what he did, you know, basically right, being prickly and all that stuff. But Ted DiBiase gets it again. And he didn't have, at that time, he didn't have to be told to do what he did,
you want
right?
To turn it off.
Go ahead.
That's correct. That's correct. I mean, there are some fans. Listen, if it was totally in character as outside the ring, it's not even to do with his kayfabe character. It's not even to do with the real Seth Rollins, you know. It has to do with him as a person outside the ring. And him as a person outside the ring, we have heard story after story after story of him being very reluctant to interact with fans. And even when he does acquiesce and interact with fans, it's very stiff and cold and take the picture and goodbye. Not an engaging person. For someone like that to take to Twitter to say, not only do I apologize, but I'm inviting you back, it just seems odd. And I'm going to go on record, and maybe I'm wrong, but I'm going to go on record as saying someone told him to do it. WWE got wind of it somehow. Maybe they even saw somebody post something about it and said, oh, no, we're not having this anymore. We got enough black eyes. I think maybe the WWE put an edict out saying you guys need to really, really respect the fans because we need every one of them. And again, you can't expect a wrestler getting off an airplane with baggage in his hand, walking through an airport with thousands of people in it to stop, because then all that's going to happen is a whole mob is going to come over them. And the next thing you know, there's going to be 600 people there, taking pictures and wanting autographs. If you stop, you kind of are obligated. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of wrestlers who say, well, I'm not going to stop. But that doesn't mean that you can't say, guys, I'm in a really big hurry. I'm sorry I can't stop for pictures and an autograph. But, man, I appreciate everybody coming out. You know, I appreciate you all coming out to see me. That's wonderful. And I'm glad to see you all, and I hope you come see the match or whatever. And certainly if you want to walk, you know, with me and take some pictures, I'll be happy to, you know, smile for the camera, but I can't stop. That's okay. You know, but when you're Sasha Banks and you tell people, grow up, get a life, stop it, leave me alone, that's not good. That's not good when you're the only person in a convenience store and the wrestler who's picking up an energy drink or whatever says, can you leave me alone? That's not good. It takes 1 second if it's only just a person there, one person there. So you got to pick your spot. I mean, I heard Randy Orton once say, the problem is you could stop and sign 600 autographs. And the 601 person, that one person that didn't get the autograph, they're going to write that I'm a scumbag and wouldn't sign an autograph. The other 600 people who are happy with the autograph are not going to write, I signed an autograph and I was a nice guy. So you can't win. I understand what he's saying. But that's why I'm saying there's a way to handle it. And the way to handle it is not to act as though it's a huge, terrible inconvenience. It's not to act as though you're doing something marvelous. It's not to act like you're giving somebody life support because you're signing your name on a piece of paper. If you're in a hurry and you really can't be bothered to sign the autographs, what I said is a perfectly acceptable thing. I'm sorry. I'm in a big hurry. It's great to see everybody out here, though. I can't believe you all came out here to get a picture and autograph, and I feel bad that I don't have time. But, you know, snap away, man. Snap away the pictures. I don't mind. You guys can walk with me to wherever I'm going and snap the pictures. I told the story once, and I will tell it again, that Bret Hart snuck out of a civic center with blankets over his head so people really wouldn't be able to tell who he is. And two security guards walking left and right, pushing people out of the way. So you couldn't even get his picture because he had blankets over his head. In other words, he was saying, not only am I not going to stop and sign autographs, I'm not even going to allow you to take my picture in passing. If you have your cell phones out or your cameras out, I'm not even going to allow you to take a picture of me walking to my vehicle. 5 minutes later, The Undertaker came out. He said very clearly, guys, I got to get to my car. Let me get to my car, and then I'll sign as many autographs and take as many pictures as I can. He did exactly that. He got in his car, rolled down the window. I guess he was waiting for a couple other people, and signed and took pictures from his car for about 3 or 4 minutes until other people came in, and then he said, okay, I'm sorry, I got to go, but nice to see everybody. So there's the difference. Nobody walked away saying The Undertaker was a horrible guy. People walked away saying, oh, man, I didn't get his autograph. I didn't quite get his picture. There were too many people. But they weren't blaming him. They were just saying, oh, man, some of the fans, you know, monopolized his time. They didn't just get a picture and move, and I didn't get a chance. Okay. But he wasn't Bret Hart. He didn't walk out with sheets over his head and two security guards pushing people out of the way. There's a right way and a wrong way to do things. And I think for a while, Seth Rollins had done things the wrong way. And so this difference in his attitude all of a sudden makes me think that this is different and was caused by something other than just him rethinking himself. So, Todd, is it possible that the WWE kind of put out that edict that, you know, you're not to be rude to the fans anymore?
Like you said about Bret Hart, he was just being an ass to the fans. The Undertaker did the right way. He got to his car. He signed autographs as many as he can until quite a few people come. That's professionalism there. What Bret Hart did was unprofessional with the fans.
Yeah, and I mean, Bret Hart never took to Twitter to apologize and say, oh, I'm sorry, I probably was a little out of line doing that. No, so when Seth Rollins does something like that, Mike, I have to think that I would like to think it was just him rethinking how he was, but I'm not that naive. I honestly think maybe he was told to do it.
Yeah, maybe he was guilted into doing it or whatever, or forced into doing it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know they're, you know, married or whatever, and I don't know what happened what's happening between them and their relationship. But maybe it's a combination of what the WWE is doing, and maybe Becky Lynch is also having a good effect on him. You know.
Yeah, it's possible. Something else that was said, though, that did catch my interest in a Seth Rollins tweet is, and this separate tweet, he basically said that Cody Rhodes, who won an ESPY for showing up at WrestleMania and having his match despite his injury, he was given an ESPY award. And Seth Rollins wrote in character, ESPN can go to hell. Cody Rhodes can go to hell. I've carried this company on my back for I don't know how many years, and I don't get an ESPY. And Cody Rhodes shows up with a boo-boo, and all of a sudden he gets an ESPY. And he also said, all of you fans who support Cody Rhodes can go to hell too. But then, underneath that, he said, however, I hear those people who are singing my song. And I understand what that means. So clearly, he's trying to walk a gray area here now, Mike, where he is a heel, but he's almost like that Diesel heel. Remember when Diesel did this and said, I'm tired of the fans, I'm tired of whatever. I don't give a damn about any of these fans in this arena unless they're wearing the black glove. If you wear that black glove, that means you support me. Those people I have time for. Those people I give a damn about. The rest of you people I don't. What did that do? Well, that sold about a zillion black gloves because everybody brought the black glove to show support. So perhaps Seth Rollins is trying to walk that line like Diesel did and get people to show support in case there's a face turn coming soon.
Maybe, and also maybe maybe it's like we've said for a while, it's time. He's done about all he can do as a heel. It's time for him to think about putting him as a face. And the fact of the matter is this could also be him at the behest of the company running a trial balloon.
Yeah, it's tough to say what's really going on there, but it is interesting. And, you know, we glossed over what Titus O'Neil said on our Tuesday show, our Monday Night Raw report, But I've been given a few days to think about it, and that's not something you do on accident. You don't send Titus O'Neil out to waste 6-8 minutes of television time bloviating about how they care about the fans and everything. Something's up. Something is up. And now all of a sudden Seth Rollins is inviting people to his studio. Not just them, by the way. He opened up a huge can of worms. Because if he had just said to those two people, who I think I might have offended, I would love it if you would come back and give me another chance, and we'll get some pictures taken and have a conversation and stuff. I could understand that, maybe. But then he says, oh, and this is just doesn't go for them. Anybody who wants to stop in, you're always welcome to stop in. I love to meet my fans. I love to interact with my fans. And just understand that if I'm working out or I'm in the middle of something, if you could just understand that it might take a minute, you know, you might have to wait and be respectful of that. I'll be more than happy to meet everybody and talk to everybody. Well, you've just opened up a huge can of worms. Because if you think that's not going to be answered, if you think fans aren't going to say Seth Rollins is basically open invitation to me to come down to where he's holding these whatevers and meet him, you're wrong. You're going to get a lot of people now. A lot of people now. And I just don't necessarily think that's something he would have done without being told to, and I don't think that's something he necessarily would have done if he was going to stay long-term a heel. I just don't. So it'll be very interesting to see what the future holds there. Aside from that, apparently Chris Jericho broke his nose in that match on AEW, posted some pictures of it, and hey, it's getting a mixed reaction as far as, you know, we're getting a lot of AEW fans who are saying too many people are getting hurt, you know, it's time to slow it down a little bit and not be so reckless because we can't afford any more injuries. And truthfully, there's a point there. You've got a lot of people injured. CM Punk and Daniel Bryan and Adam Cole. The list goes on and on, right? Jericho's got a broken nose. I don't think that's going to necessarily keep him out of action, but I get it. But at the same time, folks, this is in a way what separates professional wrestlers from the rest of the world, is they're willing to take those chances and those risks. If there is no chance and there is no risk, then it's not special. I drive a car every day of my life. I'm not going on to a racetrack and driving one at 150 miles an hour. I already know I don't have the skill to do it. I already know I'm going to crash, and I already know it's going to be a bad result. Therefore, the people who do it, I can admire and say, okay, well, that's a special skill set because I wouldn't do it. Professional wrestling is so safe that it's just beyond anybody really getting injured. Well, then anybody can do it, right? Now, I'm not saying that the AEW doesn't have a problem with this. They absolutely do. But most of their problem comes from the fact that the guys who are getting injured are in their 40s and 50s, and they're trying to keep up with guys in their 20s. That's a problem. The most wrestling injuries, if you watch this very carefully, you will see I'm right. The most wrestling injuries come from two categories. One is older wrestlers trying to keep up with younger, faster-paced workers. The second one is very light wrestlers being in the ring with very heavy wrestlers. In other words, you know, these cruiserweights going in with 300-pound guys. And that harkens all the way back to when a guy like Brock Lesnar was tossing the Seth Rollins' bodyguards there against the barricade, and look who he hurt. Hell, if he had tossed Drew McIntyre like that, do you think that would have hurt Drew McIntyre? Hell no. Hell no. It does hurt Jamie Noble, because Jamie Noble weighs 190 pounds, and Brock Lesnar's 300 at the time. So, yes, that's an important factor, but also the age is a factor. When you have a guy like CM Punk or Daniel Bryan or Chris Jericho attempting the pace of a 25, 28-year-old guy, mistakes get made because your cardio eventually goes. No matter how good a shape you're in, eventually your cardio goes. And when that starts to go, that's when you make mistakes. That was Nia Jax's problem. A lot of people said she's unsafe and she's reckless. She was, but the problem with her is her cardio was so bad that past a certain point, she was sloppy because her body wasn't cooperating. You try it. You know, we used to do wrestling drills where we would pick up a guy on our shoulder and squat them. And we would always start with the lightest guy. And some people would come in and say, why don't you start with the heaviest guy when you're strongest? That doesn't make any sense. You're starting with the lightest guy. And the reply was always, yeah, because we want to see how our body reacts when we're tired. Because if I'm 6 minutes into a match and I'm tired, I might not be able to pick this guy up the same way I could pick up a guy who's 100 pounds lighter than me. So you got to know your own limitations and say, all right, if I'm winded, I'm not going to attempt a move that's going to make me have to transition this guy's full weight, even with his cooperation, because I might not make it. There's certain moves I might want to do in the beginning of a match, but not at the end of the match, especially if the guy's way heavier than me or whatever. And likewise, the lighter guys would say, well, I don't want to run some guy whose cardio isn't up to mine ragged in the first 2 minutes of the match, and then we have nothing for 7 minutes. We have to pace and say, okay, you know, I'll do my fast stuff, and then we'll do a little rest hold, or we'll do something where there's a chance to catch your breath. If you don't do that, then your body gets tired and you start to make stupid mistakes. And that's when you drop people, and that's when you don't transition them properly, and that's when you don't protect them properly, and then you have a problem. So those are the two things most likely. And for AEW, my assumption is that since most of the guys that are injured, with the exception of Adam Cole, I don't know how Adam Cole old he is, but he's not very, most of the guys who are injured are older. And their bodies are just not reacting the same way. And they're being put in there for 20, 25 minutes with guys whose bodies are reacting perfectly under that stress, Mike. So that is an issue.
That is an issue, and think about this. I've seen the thing on Ric Flair, right? The ESPN thing on Ric Flair, right? When he was talking about when he was training with Vern Gagne, and how he trained, and one of the things he did is that Gagne did with him, with most of his trainees, was he would take a guy, have another guy on their shoulders, and have him climb stairs in the fireman's carry thing, right? You know,
right.
Climb up a staircase or whatever, you know. That's to prove what kind of cardio, because you know that actually happens with firemen every day. Firemen have to be in that good a shape to be able to go into a building, an apartment building or whatever, climb those stairs, get somebody out of there, help them out and maybe carry them out and come down the stairs. So you have to be as a fireman, you have to be in that good a shape to do that. You're right. You're right to say the difference is Adam Cole, but we all know Adam Cole's problem is he's small. He's one of these smaller type guys, you know, and he doesn't look the part. He doesn't have the padding and he doesn't look the part of a wrestler, right? You know, I'll put it to you, what makes AJ Styles the best wrestler in the world is he's the older guy, he doesn't get hurt, and he has great cardio.
That is a fact. See, that's true. And I think to a certain extent that could be Cesaro. I don't know how old Cesaro is. I don't think he's young. He's not AJ Styles' age, but he's not that young. But Cesaro is going to be the same way. But Cesaro is the perfect example. Some of the moves that Cesaro does, yes, of course your opponent is helping you. Of course his opponent is cooperating. But you still have to transition body weight. And if if his cardio was not that good and he's panting and puffing, there's a few moves that you probably wouldn't want Cesaro to give to you because you'd say, are you sure? Especially if you're heavier than him. Are you sure you're going to be able to do this without dropping me on my head? Are you sure you're going to be able to do this and transition my body weight? That's what people need to know. They need to be confident, oh, I can definitely do this. And then once you see they can do this, you're okay, well, they absolutely can, then I'm not nervous about taking the move. But if I see a guy with his tongue hanging out, panting like a dog in the summer heat, sweat flying off him like you don't know, and he can barely call the move, I don't know if I want him, especially if he's smaller than me, to try picking me up and carrying me somewhere or transitioning me properly. But what happens if he doesn't? What happens if his body gives out and he says, oh, damn, I was supposed to make sure his head cleared and his head didn't clear and I dropped him on his head. I've been dropped on my head. It's not pleasant. Pleasant. So that's why they do those things. But when you get to be 45 and 50 years old, things change. And Mike is absolutely right. That is why I think AJ Styles is the best wrestler currently in the world. Because he has kept himself in such unbelievable cardio shape. And he knows exactly his limitations during matches. That he's probably the safest overall worker in the business, not even to mention that he can keep up Theory just fine. Theory's 20 what years old and in fantastic physical condition. I didn't see AJ Styles' tongue hanging out. So, yeah, AJ Styles can still go with a younger guy like Theory for 8 minutes. I don't know if he can go 25, but you see, that's the thing. You have to know and say, well, I can't go at this pace for 20 minutes. Not anymore. Maybe in my prime I could have. I can't now. So let's get this all in 8 or 9 minutes, or we're going to have to do some rest holds or some chances for me to catch my breath or something. That's what good opponents understand. Anytime I ever fought somebody, I understood where their cardio was, and I said, okay, well, if they're bigger than me, I was in the ring with a guy that was 400 and I don't know how many pounds. And I clearly knew I can't run him around. I clearly knew that it has to be a slower paced match. And likewise, there are guys that were in the ring with me who were way faster than me. And they clearly understood, well, he's not going to keep the pace up with me. He's 6'3", 260 pounds. So that's not going to happen. So, yeah, I mean, you have to be able to play that game. And in AEW, unfortunately, the style that you present is a style that is faster paced. And I do think that if you put, like, I don't know, Chris Jericho in there with CM Punk, that's different. They're going to fully understand each other, and they're going to fully understand their limitations. But when you put CM Punk in there against a fast-paced guy, or you put Chris Jericho in there with a fast-paced guy, there is a little bit of that ego involved saying, I can still do this. I can still keep up with them. I'm as good as the young guys. But you're not. You may be better than them, technically better than them, but you don't have that cardio anymore. That's why usually the older wrestlers, the guys that stay in the business long-term in their 50s and sometimes even 60s, like Terry Funk and Ric Flair, they weren't big cardio guys to begin with. Their pace was always relatively slow. They threw in a lot of rest hold. They weren't high flyers. Their pacing was solid, and they can continue to do that into their 50s. And I'm sure Ric Flair, who's going to have this match, is going to be fine. Because of the pacing. But I promise you that if you threw him into an AEW ring and said you're fighting some guy who's 24 years old and this guy's like, fuck Ric Flair, I'm going to do my own pace, you can forget it. Ric Flair would be out of gas in 5 seconds and there would be an injury somewhere. that's my point, Mike, is that it's the style that you're doing.
Right. It's the style that you're doing. And look who he's going to probably be fighting, you know, Ric Flair. Because you know he's going
right.
to – we all chronicle he's coming back, right? Oh, and by the way, Marcus,
yeah.
Cesaro is 41.
Wow. Okay. So he's what, 4 years younger than AJ? And I would say he's in just as good, if not maybe a little better condition.
Yes. Yes. So, I mean, this guy, and look, he's a power-based wrestler as well. And what do we always say about power-based wrestlers? Power is always the last thing to go. Right?
Yes. Yes. That's absolutely correct. You know, we heard AJ Styles one time, though, when he had, I forget who he injured with the Styles Clash, and he was saying, Clash, I picked that move because even though it looks devastating, it's one of the only moves where your opponent doesn't have to do anything. Just do nothing. Don't cock your head. Don't do anything. Just don't do anything. Just go with it. And you're perfectly fine. The way to take it, just go with it. There is no make sure your head's this way, make sure you don't, you know, there is nothing that you need to do other than just go with it. I have you completely safe. But if you tilt your head toward your chin down toward your chest, or you tilt your head to the left and right, you're risking an injury. Don't do anything. So he was saying it's a finishing maneuver that looks devastating, but if you just don't do anything, there's no way to get hurt. Phenomenal forearm, same way. He's not really hitting you. Calf crusher, same thing. He's not putting any pressure on it. So AJ Styles has chosen moves that look authentic. The calf crusher looks very authentic. The Styles Clash looks extremely hurtful. And the phenomenal forearm looks like it would logically knock you out if a man 215, 20 pounds uses the ropes for momentum and hits you directly in the jaw with his forearm, that probably would knock you out. None of those are dangerous. None of those are dangerous. That's a good moveset that AJ Styles has. And the moveset that AJ Styles has is very low risk to your opponent. Very low risk. There are guys who's very high risk. I mean, we all heard the story of how Neville gave Bo Dallas the red arrow and landed directly on his ribcage. And Bo Dallas said, I literally crapped myself. I literally crapped myself. I could not help it. That's dangerous. Right? You break somebody's rib. So there are wrestlers whose moveset are a little higher risk if you're in the ring with them. AJ's not one of them. And to be honest, Cesaro's not really one of them either. A lot of Cesaro stuff is not all that high risk. And it would be high risk if he couldn't transition your weight or was tired, but he doesn't do those things during the period, Mike. And he's in a super cardio and extremely strong for his size. So I would say his moveset is also extremely safe.
Yes, and think about this. What do they call it? Power driver he does. I'm blanking on the name of the move, but that's much like the Styles Clash. You know?
Yes, very much.
The person he's putting it to doesn't really have to do anything. The swing is like that. European uppercut forearm that he does, that's like that. Most
right.
of his moves are that way. Yeah, he's a powerful dude, and people know he's a powerful dude, but he really doesn't have to show his power unless, in terms of if it's a storytelling thing inside the match, sure, he has to, but people know he's powerful, right?
No, absolutely. And if you'll notice, when he does the Cesaro swing, there are certain opponents who will put their arms behind their head. They'll interlock their fingers and put their neck in their hands. as if they're resting on a pillow. That's to support their neck, because they don't want to take a chance on having their neck twisted, or if he does drop them, they land on their neck, they'd be landing on their hands first. Other ones don't. Other ones, I guess, are fine with it, but there's a couple of ways to take that. But, yeah, most of his is safe, too. So you have to factor in all of those things when you're talking about these injuries. And AEW is going through a litany list of them. Now, I will tell you this. Hardcore matches, they're much more slow-paced. So the cardio doesn't really come into play all that much. I specialized in them. And I'm telling you right now, I kept my own pace. Very seldom did I get winded in a hardcore match, because the pacing's different. It's not, you're not running really normally. You're not being ran around the ring or anything. However, because of the nature of them, the risk can be high. The risk can be maybe even a little bit higher sometimes, because sometimes you're at the mercy of the guy giving you the chair shot or doing something to you that could potentially be harmful, and there's not much you can do about it. There's not much you can really do. I remember getting sliced up, but it was a dumb move in retrospect, but we thought we would have a very, very good high spot in which there was a glass table. Now, if you know what table glass is, it doesn't normally cut you, but it's kind of thick. And even when it breaks, it kind of shatters weird, like a windshield of a car type thing. It's not jagged glass. It's not like a window glass. So we logically said, if two people take a Beal Slam from the left and right side of me and put me through the glass table, it'll shatter and it won't cut me. Now, that's something you can't practice, because then the table would be broken. So I said, just make sure, because you guys are different height, just make sure I go over even. So I don't go over on my left side or my right side. I go over evenly right on my back, across my shoulder. In other words, when one person pulls me and I jump, the other person can't be hanging on to me, because I'll twist and I'll end up sideways. That's exactly what happened. And I picked pieces, little tiny pieces that were magnifying glass-sized pieces. Literally, you had to see with a magnifying glass, out of my arm and my side for weeks. For weeks. So that's how easy that can happen. So hardcore matches like what Chris Jericho went through, breaking your nose, cutting yourself on barbed wire or something, or hurting yourself, yeah, it can be more common. In a regular match, if you keep your pace down to what you want it to be, like Ric Flair's going to do on his match with Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal, there's no harm going to come to Ric Flair, even though he's wearing a pacemaker and he says his foot is hurt. He'll be fine, because he already has the pacing worked out. They already know what's happening. Everything has been planned, and everything is planned around Ric Flair. No one's trying to look good here. It's not Jeff Jarrett trying to look good. It's not Andretti trying to look good. It's not Jay Lethal trying to look good. This is all about Ric Flair, and that's how they're going to do this. So Ric Flair has way less chance of being injured than Chris Jericho did in his match. And sure enough, Chris Jericho gets his nose broke. Now, when Sheamus got his nose broke, Sheamus just wore that mask and went on about his business. I think he got it broke again. If I'm not mistaken, he took the mask off for some stupid reason, and then it got broke again. But either way, he wrestled with it. So my assumption is Chris Jericho will too, Todd. I don't know whether it'll be in a mask or not, but I think he'll wrestle with it.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with Sheamus was wearing the protective mask over his nose. I think there was a match with Virgil when he wrestled Sid Justice and broke his nose during the match, and he was wearing a protective nose mask during his matches as well.
Yeah, if I remember right, Ricochet broke Sheamus' nose, and then Humberto broke it over again, or vice versa. I don't know whether Humberto broke it first and then Ricochet rebroke it. I'm not sure, but I believe, Mike, that Sheamus had his nose rebroke during that period.
Absolutely. And think about this, you know, I mean, not only did Sheamus have his, but I believe Rich Holland had his broken as well at some point. And think about this. When Cody Rhodes had his nose broken, they made a gimmick out of that. You know?
Yep.
You know, so it can happen. Look, think about this. There are older wrestlers that have taken shots. Remember, late in her career, what was Moolah's big deal? She was brought in to go through tables, right? Or stuff like that, right?
Both her and Mae Young, absolutely. And remember, Terry Funk was moonsaulting into the audience in ECW events into his 60s. But Terry Funk was batshit crazy. I'm telling you, because I seen him do stuff in his late 50s, early 60s that I said, well, that's just crazy. That is just asking to be critically injured. But that's just who he was. He was willing to take those chances. I wouldn't recommend that, but that's the guy he was. But you brought up Ridge Holland, and that's a good point. You see, Ridge Holland was very confident in his ability to lift Big E without Big E really helping him all that much and giving him that suplex. And he found out, I can't. The timing was just a microsecond off, and Big E jumping wasn't a factor because he had already jumped a little earlier than Ridge pulled him. And Ridge had to muscle him over, and he didn't make it. Now, if that was the first thing Ridge Holland did in the match, maybe he would have easily handled Big E and threw him over. But he was a little bit winded, and he didn't make it. That's my point. Things change as the match progresses. That's why when I see these power moves late in a match, especially when they involve somebody of a sizable weight, I'm really impressed. Because I say to myself, whoa, like a guy like Brock Lesnar, man. I mean, you can say what you want about Brock Lesnar, but 15 minutes into a match where he's red-faced and looks like a giant tomato, he's picking guys up for F5s like they're a bag of, cotton. And I'm saying to myself, Jesus, man, he's throwing these guys around like they weigh nothing. That's the equivalent of like going into the gym and doing, 20 minutes of cardio and then saying I'm going to hit the heavyweight with no rest. Well, you're not going to be pressing your best weight. You're not going to be. So yeah, Ridge Holland was like that, Mike. And probably let's hope he's learned his lesson.
Right, and that's the thing. And it does help that Brock Lesnar does very few matches. And look,
that's true.
If he wants to work, it depends on who he wants to work with. I guarantee you, he'll come back and probably end up at some point working with Theory, because he likes Theory, and that's
yep.
the thing. When Brock Lesnar likes you, he'll work with you.
Think about this. You're right about that, and Brock Lesnar's pacing is also very slow. He doesn't do very many matches, and his pacing is slow. When he worked with Theory at Hell in a Cell, or at the Elimination Chamber, look who set the pacing. It was not Theory. It was Brock Lesnar who set the pacing. Brock Lesnar's not keeping up with Theory. Theory could run him under the table in 3 minutes, and Lesnar's tongue would be hanging out. But why would he do that? And that would just make it more likely he's going to get injured. So usually you let the bigger guy set the pace like that, absolutely, and that's what Theory did. Anyway, folks, thanks for listening. We'll see what's happening on SmackDown tonight, and we'll be back here on Sunday.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat.